There have been two words that have been stuck on everyone's mind these days, and these words are AI. Artificial intelligence. For some, these words have been invoking some sort of worry, and for others, they've been causing some excruciating excitement. I personally have been set in the middle with mixed feelings about this matter. I love tech advancement, but at the same time, I don't want to be naive about the capabilities of harm that could potentially come with this. But the question that came into my mind is, how can this new technology be applied to medtech? As a medtech engineer, I couldn't help thinking about the possibilities we could have from this new technology that seems to be evolving at an unprecedented level. The main reason for being an engineer is about taking theoretical science and applying it in a way that helps the world by creating new technologies, hopefully technologies that help the lives of many people. And I've been grateful to have had the opportunity to do that. In recent weeks in the UK, we've had several sad headlines in the newspapers, starting with a news article talking about 7 million people on the waiting list for the NHS. And to put this into perspective, 7 million people, that's basically more people than the population of Norway. So, how long do you have to wait? The NHS constitution says that a patient should be seen within 18 weeks once referred to a specialist. But the data as of February 2023 say that if you had an issue to do with your ear, nose and throat, you only had a 51% chance of being seen within that 18 weeks. Another headline that has also been quite touching is the walkouts that were done by junior doctors as they were demanding a 35% pay increase. So, this then begs the question, is it time to replace some of the jobs that doctors do? Or does this technology actually have the capacity to replace doctors entirely? Welcome to MedTech 101, a podcast where we discuss matters around medical technology and pharmaceutical drugs in a way that almost anyone can understand. My name is Rodney Moses. I'm a biomedical engineer who has a published patent for a medical device that's going to help the lives of thousands of chemotherapy patients. I've spent my entire working career in research and development for medical technology, working on cool devices that are still yet to hit the market, orthopedic implants, and the classics such as asthma inhalers. I've worked for one of the biggest medtech companies in the world, Johnson & Johnson, among several others. If you'd like to reach out on LinkedIn or on Instagram or any of the other social media platforms, please look at the description below. That's where the links are. And yeah, so getting straight to it then. I don't want to pop anyone's bubble, but I think it's important for us to actually start with the definitions, because the terms AI, deep learning, machine learning, neural networks are all used interchangeably in the media. And I know it's exciting to hear the word AI all the time. So even in medtech or other technologies, companies have been claiming to have AI technology, but in actual sense, it's just either deep machine learning or deep learning. So we're going to be starting with that first of all. And the way people tend to describe this analogy, they tend to use Russian dolls as an example to show the relationship between all three main sort of types of learning for AI. But I'm going to try to explain this using an upside down triangle because this is the best way I understand it. So if you'd like to imagine, for instance, at the very bottom where you've got the smallest triangle, there is a deep learning. And on top of that, the next layer is machine learning. And at the very top is artificial intelligence. And the reason why I like to talk about it as as an inverse triangle is because it shows the integral key functions that each layer has to play in supporting the other. Because machine learning is a subfield of artificial intelligence, deep learning is a subfield of machine learning. So if you'd like to look at that pyramid, again, we have the deep learning first. Then it goes to machine learning, then it gets to AI. But to understand what deep learning is, first, you also have to understand what a neural network is. A neural network is basically composed of four main components. The components being inputs, weights, a bias or threshold, and then an output. And the basic design of a neural network was basically a mimic of the human brain. Because when you look at the human brain on a cellular level, at a neuron, the neuron has dendrites, which basically receive the information, and then it goes into the body, the nucleus, and the information is processed there before it travels through the axon all the way to the axon terminals, where it's then communicated to billions of neurons and billions of synapses. So this is quite interesting because the level of complexity that takes place here is very hard to replicate. But for deep learning, we managed to do this using certain logic. The best way to describe this in a medtech application is, for instance, I'd like you to imagine a CAT scan that's been done on a patient, and each pixel has been given an address. So depending on the reagents that have been used to increase the resolution of that picture, because in medtech there is certain sort of like medicines people can take or get injected that will basically increase the resolution of a particular tumor. So for instance, if you have a certain tumor that is known to have an affinity for a certain drug because of its binding sort of mechanism, which is basically how much it likes a certain chemical. The chemical is injected into the body, and this allows the tumor to absorb that particular drug a lot more. So when you take an x-ray, you can actually see in greater detail. So because of this, each pixel is basically then given an address, and you'd expect the pixels where the tumor is to be brighter. So therefore, then on a scale of 0 to 1, each pixel will have a certain scale, a way to sort of like score how much it is gained. So the pixels with the high colors or the bright resolutions, we can see them as a 1, and the dark ones, we can see them as a 0. Between that scale. So what ends up happening is, for the section that there is a lot of drug, the pixels will be brighter there. And then this is then carried for that cell, because each pixel is basically given an address, to the next layer. And then the next layer is what's called the hidden layer. Here is where the information is processed before we even get to the output. Because it's quite vital for us to know exactly what's being recorded and what's being seen by the algorithm. And then because of this high resolution in that particular area, it's the computational done in the sort of the middle section of the neural network, which is the hidden layers, then leads to the output layer, where basically because there's so much resolution there, it will basically ping and say, I think that's a tumor right there. So this is like the simplified way I could think of it. Then looking at the second layer of the upside down pyramid or upside down triangle is machine learning. But then the question comes, what exactly is the difference between machine learning and deep learning? The primary ways in which they differ is how much each algorithm learns and how much data each type of algorithm uses. So deep learning automates much of the feature extraction piece of the process. And this basically means that there is less human intervention required here because it works with such huge data sets of what they like to call unstructured data. And this is quite useful because most of the data in the world is unstructured, whereas classical machine learning is more dependent on human intervention for it to learn because it basically needs sort of to be corrected. As in that example we gave, it would need a human being to basically tell it that, yes, correct, that's a tumorous cell, or no, this is a normal cell. But machine learning also has the capability to then look at that image and sort of determine by itself that this is a tumorous cell and this is a normal cell, depending on the data it's been given. And finally, we get to AI. What is AI? So AI is the most used term to basically classify machines that mimic human intelligence. It's used, you know, for all kinds of things. And I think that's where everyone wants to be. But there's sort of like three sections within AI which are worth talking about, because there is one that's called artificial narrow intelligence. And then there's another that's called artificial general intelligence. And then the third, that's artificial super intelligence. So artificial narrow intelligence is basically considered weak AI, and we tend to see it in Siri, you know, on our iPhones, and it has the capacity to do a very specific task, either winning a game or basically asking it to identify tumorous cells in our photos or in our CAT scans that we've conducted. But the other two types of AI, which are artificial general intelligence and artificial super intelligence, they are stronger types of AI, with artificial general intelligence being able to like match the performance of a normal human being, and then the artificial super intelligence, or also referred to as super intelligence, with having the capacity to be smarter or better than a human being. So with all the definitions out of the way now, I hope everyone can now sort of see that what we have right now is artificial narrow intelligence, and we are just starting to get into artificial general intelligence, as we have now seen with ChatGPT or Ameka. And all of this is quite exciting, because when we start looking at the possibilities that this new technology can bring for us, we can clearly see that there's an opportunity for personalized medication to grow, because everyone can have sensors on their body that's basically transmitting live, up-to-date, current information for what they actually need, whether it's that particular specialized diet they need to have. There's no need to try out all these new different diets, and this could actually be helping towards that medication in terms of getting the medication that you need. And as we mentioned at the start, what could we do to create a more comfortable environment for medical doctors and healthcare professionals? This could simplify the amount of documentation they have to do, the amount of time they spend looking at CAT scan reports, and potentially, even as we're going advanced, the amount of procedures they will have to do, as this could be done by a machine. But whether people want to be operated on by a machine that's unsupervised, that's a conversation we're gonna have a little bit later. I mean, for medtech, the opportunities are huge. We're talking about advanced prosthetics that could help a lot of people. We're talking about the ability to see the body or the patient from a different angle during surgery that had never been seen before. We're talking about improved data collection that can help with the prescription patients get. So, I mean, the applications this could go are massive, and I'm kind of excited when I think about it, just the capacity that we could use this technology for. But me knowing how things are in medtech, for this to pass the regulatory affairs or the FDA, for this to get to the market, we need several things. And just to say a few things, we need something called mechanistic interpretability, which basically means, can we understand how the machine has come to that conclusion? Which is quite a complex thing to do, as these hidden layers have become so massive, it's almost impossible to backtrack a decision to see how it ended up on that decision, whether it was correct or wrong. And to a certain point, it's quite a bit hard to do this because we don't even understand this for the human brain itself. I mean, you got guys like Wim Hof. I don't know if many of you guys have heard of him, but basically this guy is doing things that are not explainable. He ran half a marathon in the snow barefoot, and I think he holds the record for the longest amount of time by a human being under ice, which is quite ridiculous. And I don't know how many of you have watched Johnny English, but we know there's monks who are getting kicked in the groin and breaking all kinds of bricks and everything without feeling any pain. And we can't even explain this fully yet from a science perspective as to trying to do this reverse analysis as to how does the brain get to this decision because of that. So we then have to ask ourselves, are we asking an algorithm to do something we can't even do for our own human brains? Sometimes we can't put logic as to why people choose a particular reaction in a particular time setting. So yeah, this creates a bit of anxiety for anyone wanting to say, okay, cool, let's run with the current models we have right now for medtech, and also just the security and the data laws, because these algorithms learn from data. The question is, are we now ready to basically put all the world's data into a single database so that we can help these machines learn? Would that expose people? Does that then make the machine quite risky in terms of, is it safe to operate on people? And even if it's safe to operate on people, the last thing you want is a machine getting hacked from some remote island whilst it's operating on a president of a country, for instance. Not suggesting a new form of assassination, but those are the things we have to think about. These are the things we have to put in place and say to ourselves, do we have the capacity from a cybersecurity point of view? Because as one of the things that was mentioned in the letter that was written by OpenAI when they released ChatGPT, and if anyone hasn't read this yet, I definitely recommend you to go and have a look at this. It's called GPT-4 System Card. It was published on the 23rd of March this year, 2023. And here they go on to touch on a few things that are quite interesting, but also quite grounding for a lot of people, because they talk about ChatGPT having something called hallucinations, which you would think only happen in people. But basically what happens in this section is, well, the hallucinations they refer to is how ChatGPT or models like that start to be untruthful. And obviously for medtech, we cannot be having such things. So I guess there's still quite a long way to go in terms of developing these algorithms to the point that we have something that's more concrete. And we also have to think, does this then mean that we start losing what it means to be human? When we can just log into a computer, ask it to operate on a patient, and voila, the patient is operated on. What does it mean for everyone's job? Not just doctors or healthcare workers, but what does that mean? Does it mean that we can trust the human existence to machines? And what's quite worrying for me at the minute is how these machines have started learning how to program. So, which means the machine can basically improve itself. So there has to be a bit of like control around this. And I guess that's one of the things Elon Musk has been raising in the past few weeks before he started the new AI company, to say, okay, hold on, let's just take a pause and create regulations as to what could happen. Because as I've said time and time again, the regulatory guys or the regulatory affairs are lacking behind this technology. They are slower than the progression that's happening. So we have to think about things we have to put in place to safeguard our future in a way that we don't end up being victimized. Because one of the things that happened when they were developing the algorithm to basically find the solution to win, so in this algorithm they basically gave it the rules of the game and the preferred outcome, but there were many ways you could gain points in this game. You could gain points by collecting points from areas where you collect points and on the circuit, or you would have to finish first in this race. But the algorithm calculated that if you just stuck around the points collection areas, it would win. So to put this into perspective for MedTech, if we were trying to solve world problems that really affect the healthcare systems, such as obesity, we need to think, okay, fine. Is this something that a machine will be able to understand? Because a machine might say, okay, trying the gym and telling people to eat healthy and stuff, statistically, it's got a low success rate. But closing off the hormones or the pathways in the brain that cause hunger is the best solution. So do we then resolve to that solution where all of us have to wear a cap on our heads that tells you basically when to eat and when not to eat as a way to fight obesity? And this will obviously result in more people being healthier, but I don't think this will be the most optimum solution. So these are some of the things we are prone to when we trust our healthcare with machines that are programmed, because they don't have the, what I would like to call, the plasticity that the brain has. The human brain has the capacity to think of many possibilities and work around that in such a short time. And I'm not saying that humans don't need AI for medtech, but what I'm saying that the best possible solution in my mind would be a situation where humans and robots work together in a way that we can be in an operating room and the machine tells the doctor, okay, the blood is flowing at this rate in this particular vein. So if you cut here, it might reduce the probability of success. And then the doctor knows what to do. And that's where we need to go. And we need to do it in such a way that we can actually trust these machines. And so until then, we still have a roughly long way to go compared to what we have today. But the development has been really huge and quite quickly happening. So this means we have the capacity to see this in our lifetime. And I'm quite excited to see what new algorithms will be coming through. And as we start to progress from the large language models, which is basically what they call models like ChatGPT that process words, I want to see what's going to be coming forward now for complex algorithms such as autonomous cars and other applications. But this is definitely a point worth revisiting in the future, because this industry is growing so quickly and so fast that I'm always checking the news daily, basically, at this rate, because that's how much development is happening. So it might be worth doing another episode to cover this point in the future. And in today's episode, we basically just covered the basics of what AI means, what deep learning means, what is machine learning, some of the challenges that are being faced in the industry, how everything is happening in the world, and how this technology can basically help us going forward. So that's just a quick summary of what we spoke about today.